Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ah yes, the magnificent Trolley Sour Bright Crawler, also known as Trollicus brightolus. The worm's captivating neon colour makes it an easy, gummy prey.
Trolley!
It's a surprisingly sour, invitingly chewy, staggeringly snackable species unlike anything else found on this planet.
Eat me!
Delicious. Visit trolley.com to shop now.
Trolley, eat me!
Welcome to the Olive Podcast. I'm Janine, Olive's deputy editor and podcast host, and each episode I'll be catching up with chefs, cookery writers and characters from the food scene in Britain and beyond. Join us each week to expand your food knowledge as our guests share 10 things we need to know about a specialist subject. And do listen out for our effortless bonus episodes where they also reveal their top cooking cheats, hacks and shortcuts. I'm delighted to welcome Rinku Dutt to the podcast today. Rinku is co-founder of Rastawala, a street food business and pop-up restaurant that she created in 2014 with her dad Ron and husband Neelan to bring the food of Bengal to markets, festivals and supper clubs. She's also the author of a new book, Kolkata, Recipes from the Heart of Bengal, which was published last month and where we were lucky enough to be able to feature in Olive magazine. Welcome, Rinku, and congratulations on your book. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much, Janine, for having me.
Could we start by talking a little bit about your journey in food and how you came to create Rastawala?
Absolutely. So food for us has been an integral part since my childhood, actually. So we're actually we're the third generation in London. So my parents came and before that, obviously, it was like my grand aunties and stuff like that. So food has always been a form of a connection for us and our parents in terms of socializing, in terms of the community. So we've been brought up with it. And so that's more like the social aspect. And then obviously we grew up and had our education, went into banking, and I did that for a good 10 years. And then after that, I decided to take a year's sabbatical and then move to Kolkata and like kind of work with one of my friends who's a fashion designer there. And so I did that. And when I moved, I mean, while we were young, we used to go to Kolkata often. We have family and friends there and everything as well. But it was a very different side of Kolkata that we saw, very sheltered, and we'd go see our family and have great holidays as well. But it was only when I moved out to Kolkata, I realized how amazing the actual city it was and how much it had to offer. The nightlife, the food scene, everything, everything I realized that it was just amazing. And it was then that I started falling in love with the city even more.
Yeah.
And the 1 year then turned into 3 years in the fashion industry. And like, you know, I looked after the business with my friend who was a fashion designer. And when I came back to the UK in 2012, it was, I didn't fancy going back to the corporate life again at that point. And I was living in Canterbury. And so my husband and my dad were like, okay, you know what, let's do something which we really love, which has been so important. And so we started doing farmers markets. Like once a month, we did a farmers market offering Kolkata street food. And yeah, that's where it started. And it was just once a month, and like, you know, it just organically grew. We did that once a month, and then people were like, you know what, this is great. Let's do some festivals, and we started doing that. And then in Canterbury, we did the festivals, and then we started doing a few supper clubs. And when we moved to London, that's where we started getting a little bit more regular interest and stuff. And then like kind of the pop-ups and our little units started about, and I took it a little bit more. Like, I mean, it was always, it started off as like a hobby and something that we did because we loved doing it. And then when I moved to London, we were like, right, this is actually now a small business. Let's get this going. And it was more regular. And then I had to put a team together. But initially, it was just like my dad used to get the coach down from London to Canterbury and then help me on the weekends. My husband used to be like, right, what equipment do we have in the house? Well, let's put it all together and stuff. And then like, yeah. And then my mum used to make these little coconut balls. And she'd be like, you
know, I see, I had everyone involved in the end.
Try and sell these. So like, it was all a very much a family thing put together. And yeah, that's how it started.
Yeah. Because I think you said in the book, your granddad had one of the most famous restaurants in Kolkata.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's strange how history repeats itself, because during our upbringing, it wasn't like, I don't know if it's, but you don't take that much interest in, like, say, your grandparents and things like that. I mean, obviously, you go and see them and you have that relationship with them. But it's only when I started Rest of the World, I started digging deeper. And my dad has always been a very strong cook in our family, and even part of Rest of the World as well. And it was only when I started, like, asking more questions, he was like, look, this is where the family history is. My grandfather opened this restaurant, and it was called the Central Hotel back then. And then that used to be for the British, soldiers and stuff like that. And then it turned into Amber. So it all happened. And then my dad moved to the UK in the 1970s. So he left his whole family and like kind of the whole of that history. He left within a couple of days. Wow. And then he came to the UK to set up his life. And that had nothing to do with food as well. So it was one of those ones where we didn't talk about it much. And through our upbringing, it wasn't something that we spoke about.
Wow.
And it was just like, as Rest of the World, I came back and the history and like, kind of for me, just being a bit more intrigued.
I love it. It's kind of, it was in your blood all along.
It
and your dad's.
Been.
Yeah,
it must have been.
And now you're doing it as a career. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
So today we're going to learn all about the food and cooking of Kolkata. It's the capital of West Bengal, and you said Bengalis are huge foodies, and Kolkata itself is a home for food lovers. Tell us a bit about the scene and, you know, what it's like out there.
So just, I mean, the way I describe it is that we'll sit down, you'll have breakfast.
Yeah.
And so while you're eating breakfast, you're actually talking about what's going to be happening and cooking for lunch. And then when you're sitting down for lunch, it's like, right, so you know what? You know the fresh fish that we caught in the market? We're going to cook that for dinner today. Yeah. What preparation? So food is a point of conversation.
Yeah.
And it is something that brings everyone together. And in terms of the food scene in Kolkata, what I say, I mean, obviously the population is massive.
Yeah.
But there's food of different types to cater for everyone. So you have the small street shacks, and then you can get like the most delicious but most simple meals, like say a rice and a curry, and that can be anything between, I don't know, 30, 35 rupees, which is what, 40 pence or something equivalent. And that feeds like your, obviously, like people that are slightly, in terms of the range of food, and then you've obviously got
available.
The exactly. And then you've got the very high-end restaurants and the high-end dishes and stuff as well.
Fantastic.
Available. So it's food is everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's like, and the beauty of it is that you've got the street food people. So you've got street food vendors that are at the end of each corner of every street. And people are just going up and it's a way of life.
Yeah.
Food is a way of life in India.
Let's talk a little bit about the street food scene, because obviously you, your business was based around Bengal street food. What sort of things would you buy from the street food vendors there?
So the street food scene in Kolkata is massive. You've got street food vendors, which are mobile street food vendors that stand at the end of each corner. And then you've got little carts, and you've got little like shacks and everything as well. And the beauty of it is that it's influences from all like of different parts around West Bengal.
Okay.
So you've got the momos, which are special, like which are Nepalese dumplings.
Yeah.
But then they're so big in Kolkata. Then you've got the like the tandoor, the kebabs, you've got different sorts of chaats as well, which are like sweet, sour, tangy, and you've got different variations of that. Noodles, so the Indo-Chinese cuisine as well in India, whether it be street food, whether it actually be restaurants as well. There's a very strong Chinese community in Kolkata. So the influence of street food is from kind of many different parts of the neighboring regions and stuff.
And street food is like, I know it's slightly different here, isn't it? We've got street food that tends to be like in little hubs that people go out and eat at night or grab, and it's become a lot more popular. But there, it sounds like all the way through the day, you could just be snacking from the stalls and everyone does it.
Everyone does it. So in the morning, you could actually like, and I've done this before when I've done little video blogs as well. In the morning, you wake up and then you have like a little juice counter. Yeah. So there's people that are making fresh juices while people are running around the park to do their daily exercise. And then once you've done the healthy side, then you move to, say, a place called Maharaja, which is basically a little shop which is open in the front, and then you've got a corner that's making tea, and then the way they're pouring the tea is like a sight to see. They've got like a massive frying, like a karai, which has got hot oil in it, and they're frying puris, and you've got like a potato curry, and then within seconds you say that, oh, like, hi, can I just have this? And then within seconds, you've got like a leaf banana plate leaf bowl, and you've got a couple of puris, and you've got the potato curry there, and people are indulging in that.
Yeah.
Then you move on, say, like you have lunch, and then you've got the rolls, something that we specialize in, Rastawala, the kati rolls. So that like a paratha with a egg cooked on it, and then you have your tandoori, like chicken in it, a little bit of salads, and then that's a snack to keep you going. You've got noodles. There's a place called Decker's Lane in Kolkata as well, and that's known for the office goers. And you can have good, cheap food there. And you just need to go there and just see the scene of like kind of this one road, one path with like little seats on each side of the road.
Yeah.
And people are just sitting there eating, all the office people sitting in their suits and like shirts and trousers, just having all this street food, and then literally just popping down the plates. It's literally a sight to see. It's amazing.
God, I love the sound of that.
It's all within the, like, it's part of a daily life. And like you're saying as well, it's available throughout the day.
Yeah.
And then in the mid-afternoon, so their dinner isn't eaten until quite late.
Right, so you want to have something to keep you
absolutely
going.
Absolutely, like a tummy filler. So then you have like the pani puri, which is like the semolina puffs and stuff. Semolina little puffs that you put like spiced potato and tamarind water in.
Pushkas. Because you said in the book that you used to have competitions, didn't you? To see how many you could eat.
So people will be like, you know, you'd be like, you know what, let's go and have some pushka today and stuff. And so then people will go, and then you'll stand around the corner and people will be like, and it's magical how the vendor, he will have people around his little mobile plates, and they've got their own thing, and he's literally just pouring and just placing onto each person's bowl, and he's got a mental count of exactly how much each of the people are eating. It's not like, okay, let me serve you. You'd like four. Okay, let me. Now I finished with you. Let's move to you.
No,
it's such constant. A treat to watch. And he'd be like, right, you've had 10, you've had 20, and then and it's just like one of those quick transactions. Move on next, and it's amazing to see it. Actually.
And for people that don't know, because pushkas are quite, I mean, I've had them. They're incredible, aren't they? It's like a little, really light, crisp semolina. It's a bowl, isn't it? But it's edible.
Absolutely.
And then you fill it with a bit of liquid as well, like tamarind?
So it's a semolina puff, and then you create a hole in it. Yeah. So it puffs up, you fry it, up. And then you create a hole in the middle of it. You fill it with some spiced potatoes, and then you have like a tamarind water, which is like sweet, sour, tangy.
Nice.
And then like the magic of it is that you fill it with the water, and you pop the whole thing into your mouth, and just like how we say, just watch the explosion of flavors. It's amazing. So it's a fun street food.
I love that.
It's great.
Another thing that Kolkata is famous for is fish, because it is actually on the Bay of Bengal, isn't
it?
So tell us a bit about some of the fish things that you cook and eat.
So in Kolkata, in the mornings, so you have the veg markets and you have the fish markets.
The wet fish market.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is beautiful. Like, I mean, you see each fisherman or fish seller sitting there like haggling and like kind of trying to sell their fish. And like you've got from the smallest, small bub the fishes to like, you know, the really big, we call it rui mach or katla mach as well, which is like a white fleshed fish. And yeah, it's just, it, I would say fish is one of those ones which is, it's a dish which is cooked pretty much every day in most households.
So that's the most common thing to serve.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Like a rui march or rui fish is there. So it's a white fleshy fish.
Okay.
And it's quite like, it's affordable. And then you can make loads of different dishes with it as well. So you'd have, that is one of the fishes that most households would have. Yeah.
And you said that every part of the fish is used in Bengali cooking. Yes, I love that kind of no waste.
Yeah,
ethos.
Exactly. It's like the sustainability thing. So like the fish head, there's so many dishes that you can have. We make a lentil dal with fish head in there as well. Or you can have something, we call it a muri konto as well, which is with rice and it's like a dry fry, but you cook the fish, it's fully cooked, and then you put it within like rice and stuff. So that's another delicacy as well.
Yeah.
And then you've got obviously the rest of the fish is cooked in curries, or you have fish fry. So there's so many different dishes.
There's ways to do it. I know that no waste is important to you. You talked about your grandmother embracing winter veg like potatoes, but using using it in lots of different ways. Tell us a bit about that.
So, I mean, potato is a staple. So most vegetable dishes will have the potato in it. And then what we used to do as well, the potato skin itself, you peel it, obviously you wash it and then dry it. And then you just dry fry it. And you have that as with the rice, you'd have that as a little bit of a starter type thing.
Yeah.
So in Bengali cooking, and there's something I explained in the book, like in the Western cuisine, how you'd have, when you have a meal, you have one sitting.
Yeah.
So you sit down and you'd have, I don't know, if it's like your pie and your veg and potatoes and stuff would be all on one plate. But with Bengali cooking, it doesn't work like that. What you do is you sit down and you'd have a rice, you'd have dal and a veg and maybe a fish dish.
Mm.
And then you'd have a chutney, which is like a sweet thing at the end. So when you sit down for a meal, you'd have a little bit of rice and you have like a dal and then a veg. And that you'd finish you'd have that first.
Yeah.
And then you would take take a serving of the fish afterwards.
Okay.
So it's in a certain order that you eat your meal in. That's the nice thing about it. You have the potato skins, you'd have dried potato skin. You'd have that with, say, like your rice and a dal and then the potato skins. And then you'd have like the vegetables. And then next bit, you'd have like a fish or the meat curry and stuff as well. So it works in that order.
And I think you said in the book it can go on for quite a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it, isn't it? It's just it can go on because you have, and people can get quite offended. Like, say if you sit on the table and you'd be like, right, let me just serve everyone. And if you, like, I know my parents get like, they get quite angry during like, say, dinner parties and stuff. That we were very much trained that when you lay out the dinner table, it has to be the rice, and then you have to have the certain order in which the meal is going to be served in. And even when you're serving it, it has to be in that order. You don't put rice and fish, or you don't put rice and meat. You have to put the right, you work in that systematic order.
Is that to do with digestion as well, and how you eat various things?
And also the layer of flavors, because like, say, the meat is a slightly stronger flavor, and then the fish, it depends on how it's cooked, but you'd work your way through, it's the digestion. And to begin with, traditionally, you'd have like a shark, which is like leaves, or you'd have a bitter, and that would be your appetizer, a palate cleanser.
And it also opens up your taste buds, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you'd move on slowly to the dishes with stronger flavors.
Yeah.
And then you finish off with a sweet dish. Yeah. We've always, all of us have a sweet tooth, especially me.
Yeah, let's talk about sweets, because you mentioned in the book mishti or sweets.
Mm.
Are really popular, that Bengalis have an incredible sweet tooth.
Bengali sweet culture is one where, again, there's sweet shops in pretty much every single, every single lane that you have. And a tradition is that you go and you buy a box of mishti if you're going to visit someone.
Yeah.
You, like over here, you take a box of chocolates or something like that. So the mishti is like that. And then at the end of every meal, you have something something sweet just to finish off.
Yeah.
And I guess, it's milk-based, because I guess milk is one of those like ingredients, commodities, yeah. which was is quite readily found. And yeah. you can do so much with it. Yeah. And like by condensing it, you just get such a beautiful taste. And the mishtis as well, it's like an artistic flair as well. You have certain shondishes and certain things that are like mishtis which are made, and then you have certain prints put on them, and it becomes like showing your artistic side off as well. Yeah. So yeah, it's really
good. And you said that when people, you know, go and visit someone, they'll be offered mishti with water yes. before tea, and that's kind yes. of like a way of welcoming people Absolutely. Into the house as well.
And like I said to you, you know, as when we were young, we used to go to Kolkata every yeah. year. So it was one of those traditions where we had to visit a certain number of people, like relatives and stuff. And oh my goodness, why about like household yeah. number four? You're like, I can't eat any more sweets. And everyone's like, no, you have to have some mishti. You have to have some water and stuff. Yeah. So it's one of those ones that you greet. You'll go to someone's house and you'll give yeah. them a box of sweets. And even when someone comes and sits down, you will like kind of expectedly have like yeah. a plate of mishti and tea and water and stuff like that.
And if someone comes for a meal, is it sort of... would it be quite a generous? I mean, is it the intention to feed them as much as possible?
I think that's a leading question. I think you know the answer to that. Absolutely.
I get the sense that Bengalis are feeders. That's all.
Goodness. And it's one where they will actually watch you like a hawk.
Oh, really?
So they'll watch you. They'll be like, okay. And then the minute you finish, they'll be like, some more, yeah. some more. And I know like, kind of, that's the way we've grown up is like, come on, let's take some more. And if you're not taking it, it's like, why is it not good? It's like, no, I'm full.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't want any more. So you get filled to the brim.
So. Yeah. So you have to kind of starve yourself in preparation.
Absolutely.
I love
absolutely.
That. One thing I wanted to talk about, and it's a lovely thing, is you were talking about when you write in the book and when you cooked with your family, nothing's ever written down. And there's a word, which is it andad?
Andaj.
Andaj, which yes. is measure of the eye.
The estimate, yes, yeah. the measure of the eye, yeah.
So nothing's written down, but yet, you know, your grandmother, your granddad, your dad can make the same thing over and over again and it'll be perfect because they know exactly what they're doing. So how did you approach writing the book and doing the recipes and creating stuff where you have to have measurements for people?
So this was a massive challenge.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was lots of arguments. There was lots of... Because the thing is, I mean, a lot of the recipes which I've got in the book are recipes which I've had growing up.
Yeah.
So I wanted to recreate that. They're dishes that I make now. So certain ones I know how to make, and then I obviously did the measurements and stuff like that. And there'd be other times where I'd be like, I don't know, Mum, I'm making this potato curry. Can you help me? Like, I'm going to make the alud dom. Can you tell me, like, you know, the rest of this is over the phone? She's like, yeah, Rinku, it's really easy. It's like, okay, so come on, let's start. I've got the pen and paper ready. Okay, so you take the potatoes and you put the tomato and then you put a little bit of turmeric. I'll be like, no, but Mum, I want to know from the beginning. She goes, yeah, I'm telling you from the beginning. You take the potatoes. I was like, okay, but in the frying pan, do you have to put a little bit of oil? Rinku, of course you need to put oil. How is it going to happen otherwise? So that's what I mean, Mum.
Yeah.
Let's talk from the beginning. So, okay, so you put the oil in and then you put the potatoes in. And I was like, okay, but do you have to put some spices in? Of course there's spices in the potatoes. So it was one of those ones it was just, oh my goodness, it's not going to happen. So then there'd be times where I have to ask them to come over or I would go over and I'd have to watch like a hawk.
I was going
to
say, you just literally watch. Make notes.
Yeah, make notes. And then even that, it's like, okay, you know what? It's a pinch of cumin. Mm. What does a pinch mean? A pinch to you and a pinch to me is different.
So yeah.
How do we do it? And then having the weighing scale, I could just see for both my mum and my dad, like their blood used to boil every yeah. time. I'd be like, right, Mum, can I just quickly put this in? Just like, it's just one of those ones just infuriating them.
Yeah.
But I mean, it had to be done. And I think after a certain number of times, they were like, okay, we've got used to it. And then for me, it's easier because even though at home I don't cook with like certain measurements and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm very much more of a free cooker. But when it comes to like writing recipes down, it's something that is integral,
yeah.
isn't it? So you have to do it. So it was definitely a challenge.
Yeah. And how did you choose the recipes? Because they're ordered in different, you've got like lunch, dinner, street snacks, haven't you? How did you decide which ones were going in?
I mean, a lot of them were my favourites, ones that I thought
right.
I could. I mean, for me, writing this book, Kolkata, it was it was trying to bring out the cuisine, because it's an understated cuisine. Yeah. It's one that people don't know about. So it's one that I wanted to be able to offer out to everyone, that I know that if someone cooked in their household, it'd be something which they could access and be accessible. And there's dishes in there as well. Like there's a salmon fish bake, which traditionally in Bengali, in Kolkata, you fry the fish with turmeric and salt. But I know that, like, what I've done and how I do it at home, we've baked it in the book, and I've baked it as part of the recipe, because although it has all the same ingredients and all the flavors, I've just tweaked it so it makes it a little bit more healthy and a little bit easier to make.
It's easier, isn't it? Because when you're flipping a fish around in a pan, you've got to be a little bit expert, otherwise it can fall apart. You know, I can see people panicking about it.
Exactly. So. And then you have to take it off and you have to make the gravy, whereas this way you just make the marinade, you put it onto the fish and you pop it into the oven. Yeah. So it's just a lot easier to the stages. So that was one of the things that the dishes chosen over here was ones that I felt were make accessible to people in their kitchen as well.
I love that. So. And the book itself is lovely because you've got the intro. I read it again this morning and you just evoke so much. Like, you know, you talk about sitting in the middle of the monsoon, you know, drinking chai and watching people trying to sort of cycle down.
The monsoon,
you know,
rains.
Yeah. And then you talk about all of the, you know, Dacre Street that you talked about. And it just evokes so much about the city. So I'm hoping people are going to, you know, read it, cook from it and you know, get a little sense of Kolkata. But it's an absolutely beautiful book. What have you got coming up? I mean, obviously, the book's just been published, so you're absolutely concentrating on that. What's happening with Rastawala coming
up? So Rastawala, at the moment, we've got a unit, which is... allowed to? Yeah. Okay. So we've got a unit.
Pick yourself up.
Oh, yeah.
Go for it.
So we've got a unit in North Greenwich, part of the design district. So we've got a unit there, and that's still running. It's closed for the next couple of weeks, but it will be open again mid-November. And we're going to be continuously serving out our street food there.
Great.
I'm doing a lot more. I'm going to start up doing a lot more supper clubs now as well, because the interest for that, and that's how we started up. I've hosted a couple of supper clubs since the launch of the book, and people are like, you know what, let's do this. We want to do this. So I'm going to start doing a few more supper clubs as well and cook from the book as well, cook the dishes from the book. And that's it. And then just see how things go and just enjoy.
And where can people keep in touch with what you're doing? And if you're launching the supper clubs, where can they find out about it?
So you can go onto my Instagram page, which is rinku.dutt1 at the Instagram page, or Rastawala 1 as well, which is Rastawala. And then we've got our website as well, which is www.rastawala.com.
Yep.
And you can keep up to date with all my things there. And I hope to see some of you at my supper club soon.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for chatting to us today. It's
thank
been
you
fascinating.
So much for having me. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rinku.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Olive Magazine podcast. For more recipes and inspiration, head to olivemagazine.com. And as Christmas approaches, do check out our new online Olive shop, where we have thousands of gourmet ingredients, drinks and gifts from some of the UK's finest small businesses, as well as a new range of beautiful curated hampers. You can buy as many products as you like in one easy and secure checkout experience. We'll let the merchants know where to send their products, and you'll receive the order directly from them. Just visit shop.olivemagazine.com, and if you spend a minimum of £25 and enter the code OLIVEHAMPERS at checkout, we'll give you an extra 10% off.